Our study tonight will be in Matthew chapter 24. You know, there are a lot of people that have predicted and that are predicting the end of the world and that there are signs for such. AOC says that the world's going to end in 12 years if we don't address climate change. And if you don't know who AOC is, count your blessings. Nostradamus says that the year 2023 is the year that the world is going to end, but it has nothing to do with the second coming of Christ. But it just never fails. Anything that happens around the world that seems to be catastrophic or would seem to make people afraid, people will go to the book of Matthew and often will go to Matthew chapter 24 and try to say, well, see, here are the signs of the end, the signs of Jesus coming in the end of the world. There's a song in our songbook that says, Jesus is coming soon. And one of the verses says, when these signs come to pass, nearing the end at last. Now, if I did not know what the author intended by that, I would have to cut him some slack and give him some leeway on what he could have meant. But the author of that song said from Matthew 24, we know that the end of the world is near, and we can tell by the signs when Jesus is going to come again. Well, a lot of people have said that and said things similar to that. For example, William Miller, who was the founder of the Second Adventists, which later became the Seventh-day Adventist under the leadership of Ellen G. White, he predicted Christ's return in 1844, and he gave the month and he gave the day. The year came, the month, day, the day came, but Jesus did not come. Charles Taz Russell said October the 14th for Jesus' return. It didn't happen. So then he changed the date to 1918. And meanwhile, World War I happened, and he said that Armageddon would occur at the end of that war, but nothing happened. Judge Rutherford, the leader of the Jehovah's Witnesses and author of the book, Millions Now Living Shall Never Die, predicted Christ would return during his lifetime. But just like all the rest, he died without Jesus coming again. Mary Baker Glover Patterson Eddy, the leader of the Christian Science Movement, predicted that Christ would return in her lifetime. She lived to the ripe old age of 96, but the Lord did not come. Some 35 years ago, Johnny Cash wrote a song, or he sang the song anyway, entitled It's Going by the Book, in which he said that the biblical signs are being fulfilled and that Jesus is coming right away. And that was 35 years ago. Hal Lindsey, in his former best-selling book, The Late Great Planet Earth, claimed that the generation that witnessed the rebirth of Israel would be the same generation to see the fulfillment of all the signs of Matthew 24. The rebirth of Israel occurred in 1948. So Lindsey then said, well, in 1988, the Lord will return. It will be the end of the world. And the world will be destroyed by nuclear holocaust. And, of course, it didn't happen. He further said that the prophecy involved New York, Paris. And then he later confessed, I really don't have a clue when it's going to happen. And he didn't. None of the others did either. There was a movie that was put out in 2012. It said that the world was going to end in 2012 because that was the end of the Mayan calendar. You probably remember that one. The fact of the matter is, though, that the Mayan calendar was a collection of calendars, and the Mayan people historically never looked at it as an end of a period of time. It was just a time to start over with a new calendar. The one that I remember the most was in 2011 by a man by the name of Harold Camping. I don't know if you remember him or not. He put up billboards everywhere. There were billboards up around here. They said that Jesus was coming in 2011. He said he gave the month and he gave the day. It didn't happen. In fact, now, a lot of people celebrate May the 21st as the second coming day because that was the day he said it was going to be. People quit their jobs. They sold their possessions. There were some things that just were unbelievable that people did. I won't even mention all of it. But here's the bottom line. There have always been, and there are people today who are doing the same thing, predicting that Jesus is going to come because they think they can see in Matthew 24, in some of these so-called signs, that there is an indication that the world is about to end. There are other people that look at this chapter and they say, well, you know, the final judgment happened in AD 70. When Jerusalem was destroyed, the judgment happened, the new heavens and the new earth, they all came into being. And you're shaking your heads, some of you I see, saying, what in the world? So we're living in heaven? You know, if this is, well, you know, you understand. This doctrine is called realized eschatology. It's also called the AD 70 theory. It's also called Max Kingism because Max King is one of the proponents that made it very popular. So you've got two extremes. You've got one extreme that goes to Matthew 24 and says, in Matthew 24, I see signs that will show me when the world is going to end. Other people will say, well, no, the world actually ended in AD 70 and there was the judgment, and I don't know how anybody believes it, but I, well, when we study the Bible, there are often very helpful tools for understanding. When we look at a chapter or a paragraph that's very difficult, sometimes there's a key word or a key verse or a key paragraph that will come to mind that will help us to understand what's being said, and the same is true with Matthew 24. What I want you to notice tonight, we're not going to read all of this, I promise. I'm going to have mercy on you tonight. We're just going to read some key verses and make some observations from this chapter. But what we want to do is to notice that there are some key things that we can understand, some key passages from Matthew chapter 24. Number one, the disciples asked the Lord two questions and he gave them two answers. Jesus went out, verse 1, and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him for to show him the buildings of the temple. This was not Solomon's temple. It was destroyed in 586 B.C. Zerubbabel came to rebuild. Part of it had been damaged. Herod was now rebuilding the temple. This would be Herod's temple. So they're looking at it, and Jesus said unto them, see ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. Now that had to be a shocking statement to the disciples, who took great pride in Jerusalem and in the temple, and for Jesus to say it would all be destroyed. And so as they sat upon the Mount of Olives, verse 3, the disciples came to him privately, saying, tell us when these things shall be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? And Jesus went on to say in verse 4, take heed that no man deceive you. And I'll stop there for just a moment. Again, I want to mention this. The disciples asked two questions. Jesus gave two answers. The first answer begins at verse 4 and goes all the way down to verse 34. The second answer goes from verse 35 all the way through verse 51. So once we know that, we have a reference point. It's very important. So these first verses answered in verse, the first question rather answered in verses 4 through verse 34. Verse 34 is key. It has been called the continental divide of the Olivet Discourse. In other words, this is the dividing line. Jesus said in answering that first question, verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. Friends, that generation has passed, and the one after, and the one after, and the one after. It's been 2,000 years ago. Okay? Jesus said, you're going to see, or you're going to know, it will be in your generation, the things I've told you in verses 4 through verse 34. So that's a key passage. The second answer, of course, is given later, as we mentioned before. So, when shall all these things be? Well, in verse 5, Jesus said, these things are going to be, the destruction of Jerusalem is going to happen after many came in his name saying, I am Christ, and have deceived many. He said, it's going to come after wars and rumors of wars, verse 6. But he said, don't be troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet, the end of Jerusalem in that context. Down at verse 9, he says, it's going to happen after betrayal, after abundant sin, cold-heartedness. He said, they'll deliver you up to be afflicted, to kill you. You should be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. Many false prophets shall arise and deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. Well, now we all admit that that's kind of descriptive of some of the things that go on in our world today and in our culture today. But the same was true 100 years ago and 100 years before that. And as long as the world stands, there will always be some of these things that are going on. There will be false prophets. There will be people who lose their faith. The love of many will wax cold. All of those things are going to happen. But then you get down to verse 34 and finishing the answer to that first question, when will Jerusalem be destroyed? When will all of these stones be torn down? Jesus said again, this generation shall not pass till all these things shall be fulfilled. Well, also in verse 14, the gospel would have been preached to the whole world. In Colossians 1 and verse 23, Paul said that in his lifetime it had. So he asked the question, was there any real sign? Was there any real sign in all of this? And there was a sign of the coming destruction of Jerusalem. Jesus said all of those other things. Don't be deceived by them because they're not signs. But there is one. He said, when you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. This is from Daniel 9. We'll read it in just a moment. When you see that stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Now, at the end of the world, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't 1 Thessalonians 4 say that when the Lord returns that we're going to be caught up together with those that have died before to meet him in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord? Does not Paul say in 1 Corinthians 15 that when the Lord appears that we will be changed if we're alive and we're a Christian in the moment, in the twinkling of an eye? Pray tell me how we're going to have time to flee to the mountains and hide, and what caves are we going to hide in to shield ourselves from the destruction of this planet, 2 Peter 3, and from the judgment of Jesus Christ? Nowhere. He's not talking, obviously, about the judgment. So he goes on to say, you know, pray that your flight is not in winter. Verse 20, there shall be great tribulation, not since the beginning of the world or to this time. So those who were in Jerusalem, who understood, were to flee. Now, what was the abomination of desolation? The abomination of desolation was the entry of a Gentile into the holy place of the temple. You see, the Jews had been rebelling against Rome, and Rome had gotten tired of it. Nero had died, and three other emperors arose or were appointed in 1 year, and they all died. Vespasian had been dispatched to go to Jerusalem to put down the rebellion. And so Vespasian was there. He was a military man. But word came to him from Rome, and they called him back to come back to begin to serve as the emperor. And so he sent his son Titus to Jerusalem to put down the rebellion and to put it down once and for all. And Titus showed the Jews on more than one occasion that he could take them at any time he wanted to. But one of the last things that he did was to go march into the city and to go into the temple and to go into the holy place and to do some other things that were there that were just an abomination to the Jews, the abomination of desolation. The faithful who saw that, they knew. They knew what Daniel had said in Daniel chapter 9, and they fled to the mountains. And they got out of the city of Jerusalem. And it is said that the people who had listened to what Jesus had told them, not one of those people, not one of them lost their lives, because they did flee to the mountains, fled to Pella and to other places. Titus came in and destroyed Jerusalem. And we'll say just a little bit more about that in just a moment. But was there any real sign? Yes, there was. And the sign was the abomination of desolation that would be seen where? And I want you to get this. That would be seen where? That would be seen in Jerusalem. The warning was not for Paris or New York or even San Diego. The warning was for the people living in Jerusalem, because that's where what Daniel prophesied was going to happen. We'll read it in just a second. And so it didn't affect people all around the world. It affected the people that were in Jerusalem and those who were in Judea. Well, all of the pseudo or all of the false signs and the one true sign refer to the destruction of Jerusalem, not to the end of the world. And when was Jerusalem destroyed? It was destroyed in AD 70, approximately 37 years after the death of Christ. So Jesus talked about a lot of things that were going to happen. There are going to be wars and rumors of wars, earthquakes and all those kind of things. So we need to ask the question, how do local events historically, and when I say local events, how do events that happened in Jerusalem and Judea during that period of time, how do they stand up against what Jesus said? Well, we know historically that there were multiple earthquakes and Roman wars that plagued the area. There were a lot of those things that were going on. The Romans who were determined to stop the Jewish rebellion, as I mentioned before, they came and destroyed the city. But I want you to notice this next statistic that shows up on the screen. Over 1,350,000 Jews died in the destruction of Jerusalem, and over 100,000 were taken into slavery. Historians revealed that the Romans were crucifying. They were crucifying so many of the Jews, they ran out of places to crucify them. And not only that, but they ran out of materials to use for crosses, reusing them over and over again. Historians call it the bloodiest picture in the book of time. It is said that the blood that was running through the city streets was so deep that it reached the bridles and the horses' mouths. And that was stated by someone, it was written by someone who was very closely associated with those events. I want to mention one other thing that's not on the screen, but maybe this will help put some of this in perspective. More people died in the destruction of Jerusalem than in Hiroshima, Japan, when the Enola Gay dropped the atomic bomb. More people died in Jerusalem in AD 70 than on that day. It was a horrific event. Is it any wonder that Jesus told the people that would trust in him and believed in him, when you see the abomination of desolation, get out of the city. Pray that it's not on a Sabbath. Why? Because the gates would be locked. Pray that it's not in the winter. Why? Because your travel will be hard. Pray that a woman is not about to give birth to a child because you've got some traveling to do and you've got to put some distance between you and that city and you've got to do it in a hurry. But there was only one sign that was given. So let me just review this. The impending destruction would involve the Jewish temple, verses 1 through 5, the holy place, verse 15, and the city of Jerusalem, Luke 21 and verse 20. That's another thing. When we consider this, it's good to consider all three of the gospel records. But in Luke 21 and verse 20, notice the specificity here. And when you shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, and I'm going to stop for just a moment there, and I'm going to tell you to note what that does not say. It does not say when you see Jerusalem compassed by angels. You'll understand that in a moment. When you see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. What is the desolation of Jerusalem? The armies that came against Jerusalem were going to destroy it. And that's what Jesus said. Not one stone will be left upon another. I was going to read it a little bit later, but turn on over to Daniel 9 and notice something else that Daniel says that kind of that lines up exactly with what Luke says and with what Matthew says. In verse 26, I'm going to back up to verse 25 because there's some terms we need to see here very clearly. Daniel 9:25. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah, the Prince. Now, I want you to notice that if you underline anything in your Bible, underline Messiah and Prince, because the Messiah is the Prince and the Prince is the Messiah, and that is important. Unto the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again, the wall, even in troublous times. Talking about what Nehemiah did and Zerubbabel. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off. But not for himself, and the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. Who's the prince? The prince is the Messiah. Who's the Messiah? The Messiah is Jesus Christ. Jesus was going to be put to death. He was going to cause the sacrifice to cease because there was no need for animal sacrifice anymore when Jesus died on the cross. That's the next verse. But look again at verse 26. Messiah shall be cut off, not for himself, and the people of the prince who is the Messiah, the people, they shall come, shall destroy the city. Matthew calls them the armies that he would send, or in Luke. The end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, a week of years, 7 years. And in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. That's the crucifixion of Jesus. Because there was no need for animal sacrifice once Jesus had died on the cross. And for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate, even unto the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. Now Daniel tells us a couple of things we really need to know. That is who the Messiah is, and that he is the Prince. And he tells us that it is his armies, Luke tells us that it is his armies that are going to come, that are going to cause this desolation. So we'll come back to that in just 1 second, but remember that. So Jesus urged that they would leave and that they would have the opportunity to have quick access to leave. Let's move on quickly. So Jesus said that he would come immediately after the tribulation of those days. What was the tribulation of those days? The abomination of desolation and the flight into the mountains, verses 15 through 28. Immediately means very close, doesn't it? You see, some are telling us today that immediately means now, some 2,000 years later. But the people who read that, they understood. They understood that immediately does mean immediately. How was he to come? This is an important question, and that's what we're trying to address and what we have been addressing. We read from Luke 20 and verse 21, and when you compare Luke 20:21 with Daniel 9:25 through 26, and then I'm going to read Matthew 22, we're going to find that the Lord is coming representatively through his armies, not his angels, through his army, the Roman army. Matthew 22, Jesus answered and spake unto them again by parables and said, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a certain king which made a marriage for his son, sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come. He's talking about the Jews not coming to the call of the gospel. Again, he sent forth other servants, saying, tell them which are bidden, behold, I prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready. Come unto the marriage. But they made light of it and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his merchandise. And the remnant took his servants and entreated them spitefully and slew them. That's what the Jews did to the apostles and to the prophets. But when the king heard thereof, he was wroth, and he sent forth his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned up their city. He sent his armies and burned up their city. Then saith he to his servants, the wedding is ready, but they which were bidden were not worthy, the Jews that had heard the gospel message the first. Go ye therefore into the highways, and as many as ye shall find, bid them to the marriage. So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together as many as they could find, bad and good. The wedding was furnished with servants. You know the rest of the parable. For the sake of time, I'm going to stop right there. What did he say? That he sent forth his armies and destroyed those murderers. What did Luke say? Luke said, when you see the armies, when you see Jerusalem being surrounded and the abomination of desolation, Matthew says. So we've got the Lord who's going to return in judgment against Jerusalem. And how is he going to do it? He's going to do it through the Roman army. Daniel said it. Luke recorded it. And Matthew explains it in chapters 22 and chapter 24. That doesn't mean that Jesus didn't do it. He did it, but he did it through the Roman army. Well, how would he come? He would come representatively through the passages that we have just mentioned. Let me ask you a question, though. How do those predictions stack up against history? Well, in verse 27 of Matthew 24, it says, as lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even to the west, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. Coming through his armies. Well, from which direction did the Romans approach Jerusalem to destroy her? They came from the east. And then in verse 28, for wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. What is the significance there? Did you know that the Roman shield bore the symbol of an eagle? So when you look at what Jesus predicted, and then you look at history, with the Romans coming to destroy Jerusalem, you'll find that all of these things fit. They fit perfectly. And this language is not unusual. It's the same language that was used concerning the coming of the Lord in judgment against Pharaoh by the armies of Babylon in Ezekiel 32, verses 1 through 11. It's the same type of language that he used against the Babylonians who would be destroyed by the Medes, Isaiah 13, 1 through 22, the end of Judaism, Joel 2, 1 through 11, and even for the crucifixion of Christ, Joel 2, 28 through 32. So this language is not unusual. It may seem a little bit unusual, but the Lord does many things representatively or is said to have in the Scriptures, and this is one of them. And in Daniel 9, remember, don't ever forget that in Daniel 9 and verse 26, Daniel, who gave the prediction of the abomination of desolation, said that these were the people of the prince that would destroy. And the prince is who? The Messiah, the Lord. that it was the people of the prince that would destroy the city. Well, the sun, moon, and stars being darkened, and stars falling from heaven, excuse me, are usually used in this type of language to indicate the failure of human authority and institutions. Let's just make a couple of observations then. The fact that this coming could be foretold by the Gentile going into the holy place, and that this coming would occur during their generation or during their lifetime, verse 34, proves that this is not talking about the end of the world. That one fact alone. So if someone tries to tell you, well, all the signs are coming to pass, remember what Jesus said. Don't fall for the false prophets and the many people coming saying they're in my name, they're speaking for me. Jesus said, because the only sign you Jews in Jerusalem are going to get is the abomination of desolation in the temple. Not in New York, Paris, London, San Francisco, or anywhere else. It was for them. It was in their generation. The angels were going to be sent forth. Angels, angelos, literally means messenger. They were going to bring people from all over the earth. Paul said in Colossians 1 and verse 23 that the gospel had been preached to the whole world. The messengers of Christ had gone throughout the world preaching the gospel and calling people in and calling them to the kingdom to become members of the New Testament church. John 6, 44 through 45 tells us that men are called by the gospel of Christ. So, what are the signs of the end of the world? Well, if you're looking at the screen, you're cheating because you already have the answer, right? You already know the answer. I know you do. When we see what Jesus is saying and the first question that he answered and that it had to be in their generation, you know the rest of it. As Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story. There are absolutely no signs of the end of the world. Man does not know when. Jesus does not know when. The angels do not know when. Only the Father knows when. Verse 36, but of that day, the day of his coming, the end of the world, but of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. If he's going to take them all away, then how would we have time to go hide in the mountains? Verse 42, watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord doth come. Verse 44, therefore be you also ready, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man cometh. In verse 50, after talking about the evil servant who began to smite his fellow servants and to eat and to drink with the drunken, Jesus said, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Chapter 25 and verse 13. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour when the Son of Man cometh. Verse 36. 2 Peter 3 and verse 10 tells us that the day of the Lord cometh as shall so come as a thief in the night. 1 Thessalonians 5, 1 and 2 tells us the same thing. But of the times and seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you, for yourselves know perfectly well that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. Does a thief send you a text message and say, hey, I'm going to be over tomorrow night about 10:30? You know, does he ring the doorbell and say, hey, I'm coming in? They don't send you an advertisement. A thief comes when he is, or she, is least expected. The Bible says that's when Jesus is going to come, when he is least expected. Noah's contemporaries were totally surprised when the first raindrops fell. Just as the homeowner is surprised by the thief, the unfaithful servant of verses 48 through 51 was surprised. The 10 virgins, they were all surprised in Matthew 25, 1 through 13. Now the foolish virgins were surprised more than the other ones. But they were all surprised because they didn't know when the bridegroom was going to come. The one talent man, Matthew 25, 14, 30, he was surprised when his Lord returned. And so all of these occur in answer to the disciples' question, what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? What is the conclusion that we can draw from all of this? Jesus does not teach anticipation. Jesus teaches preparation. Preparation. Watch, therefore. Therefore, be also ready. Watch, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. So I don't care what Nostradamus said. I don't care what AOC said. I don't care what all of the others have said. The Lord may come this year, but there's no way we're going to know it until it happens. Cannot be predicted. When Jesus said, the angels in heaven don't know it, I don't know it, only the Father knows it, and tells us, since none of us know it, you don't know it either, but you need to watch and be prepared. So signs of the end of the world? There are none. But that begs the question, am I ready should it be this year? Am I ready should it be tonight? Are you a child of God? If the Lord did return tonight, you know deep down in your heart the answer to this question, and that question is for you to answer. If the Lord were to return tonight, would you be ready? Believing in Jesus Christ as the Son of God, repenting of sin, confessing your faith in Him, and being buried with Christ in baptism for the remission of sins. Have you done that? If you haven't, you're not ready. Might be another 1,000 years. Might be in 10 minutes. That's something that each one of us need to consider and make our choice accordingly. As a child of God, have we been faithful? If He comes 1,000 years from now, or if He comes in 10 minutes, will we be ready?